Now, as you would know, thousands of people massed in the streets of Hong Kong again today. Not as many as the million estimated to have been protesting last Sunday, but today's, Wednesday's effort succeeded in stopping the Hong Kong legislators from getting inside to begin debating those controversial extradition laws. Laws which would enable the mainland Chinese regime to pull people back from Hong Kong for alleged offences committed to the mainland. Now, it's not surprising that the impact, the ramifications of passing these extradition laws would be far-reaching. And our guest argues that it will affect NGOs, international business, etc. Hong Kong would no longer be the safe haven it's been known as. Anthony Dapperton is a Hong Kong-based corporate lawyer and writer, as I said earlier. You might remember me talking to Anthony in 2017 when his book City of Protest, A Recent History of Dissent in Hong Kong, was published. Welcome back, Anthony.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Before you outline what these laws might mean, you've been in the thick of the protests today, and I understand you kindly recorded a little bit of audio for us. What are we about to hear?
Yes, so you're about to hear the protesters down at the protest site earlier today. In the first part of the recording, you'll hear a local man calling on people to come down and help out, sort of come and help, he's calling. And then you'll hear the crowd begin to chant the words withdraw, referring to withdrawing the proposed draft law. They'll be chanting the word withdraw.
Roll cameras. It wasn't in the end the national strike that had been predicted, was it? But it was pretty big.
That's right. And just to bear in mind, the largest group of trade unions in Hong Kong, the Federation of Trade Unions, is actually a pro-Beijing Chinese Communist Party affiliated union group. So when they called general strikes back in 1967 during the Cultural Revolution era riots, those strikes did bring the city to their knees. But this time around, of course, the Federation of Trade Unions are on the government side, say, so they didn't lend their weight to the strikes. But certainly plenty of small businesses were declaring that they'd close down for the day. And many large companies, including major banks, major accounting firms, told their employees that they would adopt flexible working arrangements today, which meant that many people were free to come down and join the protests.
So flexible work conditions was code for you can have the day off.
Basically, yes. That's right.
Okay, now in terms of stopping the process of the bill, well, that succeeded for today at least, Anthony.
That's right, it has. The legislators simply couldn't get in the building to commence the debate today. The government this evening are saying they still plan to press ahead one way or the other, so we'll see how this unfolds in the coming week or so. The other point to bear in mind is that we're almost upon the summer recess here in Hong Kong for the legislature, so if it doesn't happen in the next 2 weeks, they may be forced to postpone it at least till after the summer break, which may leave some time for perhaps some tempers to cool and some wiser heads to prevail in terms of thinking about the plan again.
Anthony, would you be kind enough to remind me about the structure of the legislation, of the legislative body? I understand it's unicameral.
It is, yes, it's unicameral. Fairly unique in that it's unicameral. Half the seats are elected by what they call geographical constituencies, so similar to seats that we have in Australia for our House of Reps. The other half are elected by what are called functional constituencies, and these are basically various business groups, professional groups, and so on, many of them pro-Beijing. And through that sort of bifurcated system, it enables the pro-Beijing parties generally to win a majority of the seats in the parliament without winning a majority of the popular vote. So it's a way for them to retain control.
What's your personal view of the dynamics of the events we're looking at? Where do your sympathies lie?
Well, as a lawyer and someone who I guess as a Hong Kong resident who values the importance of the one country, two systems rubric under which we all live, I think it is important to maintain Hong Kong's rule of law, maintain that clear demarcation between the
Hello, Anthony. Has he dropped out? Oh dear, oh dear. The perils and the pleasures, I might add, of live radio. While we make contact with him again, let me remind you that this is or was Late Night Live, and we're looking at Hong Kong's crisis point, how the proposed extradition laws will impact NGOs and business. Any sign of Anthony returning to the bosom of our family? Can we play a little bit of music? While we attempt to make contact, let me suggest what I expect to hear from Anthony, and that's that the extradition laws will have a huge effect on NGOs, a lot doing mainland-facing activities such as human rights or labour rights will be under a cloud. So Human Rights Watch, Amnesty, people directly engaged in political issues on the mainland are under threat. And if the Chinese government feels that it undermines their activities, they want to remove that threat. They can use any pretext to harass those organisations and threaten staff with extradition. Of course, Hong Kong has been a place to be close to China and get up-to-date info without actually being there. So for NGOs and academic researchers and intelligence and all, organizations, this is one of the benefits of Hong Kong, and I think we have Anthony back. Anthony, I've been tap dancing furiously in your absence, but so we've covered the NGOs. Mightn't it be an own goal for China if business is also lost as a consequence?
Yes, it certainly would seem to threaten Hong Kong's position as an international financial center and as the place where many multinational companies are comfortable setting up their Asian headquarters. And it's that potential threat to the multinational corporations that is the other one of the other key concerns of this proposed law.
What are the other sectors likely to be affected? You cite, I see here, business intelligence.
Yes, business intelligence is a field that many people doing business in Asia are concerned about when they're dealing with counterparties that they might not know too much about. The systems in Asia are not particularly transparent, and so they hire business intelligence companies or due diligence investigators or private investigators to carry out various investigations of their counterparties and people they're doing business with, and they often find themselves in trouble. A business intelligence company that was helping GlaxoSmithKline in China found themselves in trouble. Their CEO, Peter Humphreys, was detained in Shanghai. One of the current two Canadians that find themselves detained by the mainland, perhaps in retaliation for the Huawei CFO's detention in Canada, also works for a sort of business intelligence group. So this is another area that's likely to be affected. And then any other business that really has any kind of a risk profile in China in terms of the business they're involved in. So businesses that spring to mind are the natural resources, mining companies. Rio Tinto found themselves in trouble in China a few years ago. The pharmaceutical industry, as I mentioned, GlaxoSmithKline earlier. And also looking a little bit more broadly, the technology industries. If, for example, the countries overseas continue to cause problems for Huawei and other Chinese technology companies, China may decide to retaliate by taking a closer look at some of the international technology companies doing business in China and choose to pursue its executives in the same way that they feel that Huawei's executives have been pursued.
So it's a really pivotal point for Hong Kong, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And it's something that really goes to the heart of Hong Kongers' identity, you know, their sense of what it means to be a Hong Konger and what it means to be a part of a place that is distinct from the rest of mainland China. And I think that's really why it's provoked such a visceral response from the Hong Kong people. They don't like to see anything that might blur that distinction and that might cause the what they call the Hong Kong core values, those rights and freedoms that Hong Kong enjoys that the rest of mainland China doesn't, that might cause them to be compromised in any way.
I suspect that our breakdown in communications was a part of this great plot. I blame the mainland. Look, thanks very much for that, Anthony. Anthony Dapperin, Hong Kong-based corporate lawyer and writer. And let me remind you that his 2017 book, City of Protest, A Recent History of Dissent in Hong Kong, was published by Penguin and is highly recommended. LNL on RN.